Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, lots of good stuff here. As every day at 6 o'clock, we take a look at what is on 1053thefan.com, how the Cowboys could have $120 million in cap space and bring everyone back. That's a video up right now. Jeff has the two names most linked to the Cowboys in the draft and a suggestion to stop trying to trade Dak Prescott. I like that. Let's start with that here.
Yeah, leave my quarterback alone.
General at your service. If you see me, bear me. N.A. Heineken 0.0 be flowing nicely right about now. Wouldn't even be broadcasting under the influence. We'd be clearly over the influence with that. 0.0, no alcohol at all. Jeff Cavanaugh, Mike Bassick, Lucius Alexander along with you. We are the G-Bag Nation here on The Fan. Yes, you heard right. Mike's joining the KNC Masterpiece.
What?
Tomorrow's his final show in the nation.
I know.
I'm sure you'll fill in at some point. We'll see each other every day and all that, and we're still co-workers. But it's going to be different. So we appreciate you toloing through a transition, but we do believe this is going to make the station even stronger with Brian Broaddus joining the G-Bag Nation starting Monday. Mike Bassick with KNC.
I'm just going to say, sometimes we get pigeonholed, and Broaddus is getting from a few people. Broaddus is getting pigeonholed as all football all the time. And I get pigeonholed as shut up and just talk baseball, or you don't even know baseball at all. Broaddus knows a lot about other sports. Just because he got a professional job in football doesn't mean he can't talk basketball or baseball or hockey or whatever sport we're talking about. Just like it doesn't mean I can't talk football or basketball because I was lucky enough to get to play in one of the sports.
We're actually going wall-to-wall hockey with Broaddus. Thought that'd be a good strategic
He will be
decision.
Carrying our hockey
glad.
Talk.
I'm like super happy now because I would present zero to that. So
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting transition, you know, Monday. But we're thinking about this with Spittle. They are the best team right now in DFW sports, and they have the best chance to end our championship drought. Unless the Mavs rally.
I think that the Stars have a better chance this year, but I bet in the next 6 years overall, if you take like a 5 or 6 year window, probably the Mavs have a better 5 or 6 year window just because it seems like stuff changes in hockey so quick.
Yeah.
It's not like teams go on 5 or 6 year runs in hockey.
Usually not. Yeah. And the best players, which Luka is one of a very, very few. He's a Mount Rushmore guy. The best players dictate championships in basketball more than the other sports, maybe even combined. Okay, but let's kick it over to Jeff Cavanaugh here. I'm really looking forward for more details on this video that you did. Two names most linked to the Cowboys in the draft. Stop trying to trade Dak Prescott. Take the floor, Jeff.
So Troy does a great job on the morning show on Sean and RJ of being the mock draft roundup guy.
Okay.
And every once in a while he'll send out like, all right, here's who the Cowboys are picking. And this morning he sent out 6 different mock drafts. Like, hey, look, here's who the Cowboys are taking. And this one. And it was only 2 names on 6 mock drafts. And they're actually all roll tied. They were all Alabama. 3 different guys had Xavier McKinney, the Alabama safety, and 3 different guys had Trevon Diggs, the Alabama corner. And I would like to announce that I would not love either one of those picks at 17. Wouldn't hate them, but I wouldn't love them. For me, those are trade down opportunities. He turned his mic off, Mike. No problem. That didn't hit the air.
That was a rather healthy belch, though. It was a surpriser, too.
And then the second part of the video was about because I'll just have people, a lot of times the video will be like a mailbag. I'll just have people like, hey, tell me what you want to talk about. And one guy was drawing up a scenario like, hey, what if we could hit Dak Prescott with the non-exclusive franchise tag when somebody signs him away, take the 2 first-round picks, sign Ryan Tannehill, and I was just like, I don't want to do this. I would like everybody to stop trying to trade my quarterback. I would like the Cowboys to get a contract done with Dak Prescott so that everybody will stop trying to trade my quarterback. And just let it play out. Let the man be the Cowboys quarterback for the next decade and stop freaking out all the time, okay?
All right.
Yeah, it comes with its challenges when you pay a quarterback. There's bigger challenges when you let a good quarterback walk. And I'm not interested in the bigger challenges. I'll take the challenge of, hey, Will McClay, hey, Scouts, hey, Steven, do a better job of accumulating talent. Because we now have less money to spread around. You guys have to do a better job of getting us young, cheap talent under the cap to win the Super Bowl. Not Ryan Tannehill. And I'm a Ryan Tannehill defender. Yeah. I think he overachieved in Miami because that was a bad situation and a bad team. And he played great for Tennessee. But that isn't going to hold up.
Okay, so he wasn't the problem this year. He wasn't. There were issues and problems, and we can blame most of it on the coaching staff and some on the players. Do you think, let's just say he signs a 5 or 6 year deal, so we know he's going to be here the next 5 or 6 years. Do you think there'll ever be a time in those 5 or 6 years that you could see yourself saying, the reason that we're not in the playoffs or the reason that we're not having the success we need is because of Dak Prescott? Or do you feel confident that he will never be a problem or issue?
I don't think his play will ever be an issue, but sure. I think over the next 5 years, we'll do segments on how that amount of money tied to the salary cap has made it hard to surround him with enough talent. Like, I think that'll absolutely be a topic. But I think that if you let him go, you'll be doing a lot more segments on why can't the team win and who's going to be the next quarterback and how in the world are they going to get good again. And I don't want those segments.
I mean, the similar things were said about Tony, and he did get paid. And, you know, they were still in position in 2014 and 2016 to be great.
Yeah.
Then when he got hurt, his dead money was on the books, like $50 million worth of it over 2 years, or $30 million over 2 years. And then Dez's dead money went on the books, and they still kept winning. So it's very possible with $20 or $30 million extra dollars on the cap, but it goes back to drafting. And I don't know. I think that run the Cowboys were on for 4 or 5 years is not something you can expect. I think that might have been their best 5-year team building period in the salary cap era, and my fingers are crossed very tightly they can get back and execute something like that.
And I also think that Dak Prescott, for like, I'm the most Prescott positive guy on the show, he has to continue to get better. If they're going to win a Super Bowl, he has to continue to get better. I think he had a very good year last year.
Yeah.
I can't take it to great because of what Mike brings up. There's too long of a stretch where the offense wasn't good enough. But I think he was very good. And the idea that, oh, he'll never win, he's not good enough. And it's like, can we look at his career and at how quarterbacks work? They don't stop getting better at year 4.
Yeah, great point.
Usually they stop getting better at year 6 or year 7. So your guy is still on the rise unless you think he doesn't work hard enough or unless you think he hasn't improved throughout his career so far. And to the one other aspect of the doubters, it's like, you'll never win a Super Bowl with Dak Prescott. You know what? I agree. I don't. The odds are he won't win a Super Bowl. But I think you have a much better chance trying with him than you would over that same time period trying with a quarterback who we don't know who he is yet.
Yeah.
It's hard to win. Yeah, I would bet against the Cowboys winning a Super Bowl with Dak because Pat Mahomes will always be there, Lamar will be there, whoever else will be there. You have to be the best team in football or you have to get really hot at the right time. Can they? Sure.
Yeah.
Would you bet on it? Probably not.
I mean, you had Roger Staubach, you had Troy Aikman, you had great teams, great coaches. Now, hopefully you can get great coaches. You know, if we're going to stick with Dak, I hope we don't fall in love with a coach and believe he's the guy for a decade. If it doesn't work for 2 or 3 years, try another coach. And, you know, I would say if in 2 to 3 years, Dak, you feel like has peaked, I mean, I'm with you. I support Dak. I want to see the Cowboys try to win a championship with him. I want to see him get $150 million and all that. But I do think we have to be open-minded and honest with ourselves if we start getting feedback that maybe the job's a little bit beyond, right? This Cowboys organization is one that needs to have the standard be championship. And there needs to be a tireless goal for every NFL team to have Patrick Mahomes on your roster. You know, and I know there's only 4 or 5 of them in the league at all times.
Right.
But the moment you know you don't have one.
There's only one of Pat.
You need, of all time. You need to get back in fishing because while you have this quarterback who's not GOAT possible, other GOAT possible guys are coming into the league. Do you want to wait another 5 or 7 years because your guy makes the Pro Bowl every other year?
And
you're wasting time and opportunities to find that dude.
To your point, Tony Romo, very good quarterback in the NFL. And we never got that far with him.
Yeah.
It's not his fault. Sometimes it was his fault, but most of the time it wasn't. But I guess that's what concerns me about signing Dak. And not that I'm saying don't do it. Go ahead, do it. It's going to happen anyways. And I'm hoping that he can overcome what Tony Romo couldn't overcome. What in 4 years, take out the salary situation. Dak was a good quarterback for 4 years with his shining moments and moments we weren't that happy about.
More than
and
one
we never
moment.
Could overcome. So far, since 2006, a good quarterback from 2006 to 2019 hasn't been able to overcome the Dallas Cowboys challenges. And so that's why I'm like, ooh, we're going to do it for another 5 to 7 years.
Jeff, that's the scariest thing, isn't it? That maybe these quarterbacks have been good enough. And maybe Tony should be getting remembered right now like Rodgers and Breeze.
Oh, see,
and
I
we
think,
should already be thinking about Dak like he's Russell Wilson. But the team wins championships. Organizations win championships. And the quarterbacks, you know, they're the most important player. But there is an element of kind of along for the ride. That's terrifying to me that we could. And you never know because you can't 100% quantify quarterbacks like that.
And, you know, it's hard to predict because – is Dak as good as Eli Manning was at football? Sure. He's probably better. And Eli managed to get a couple, but there's a lot of guys. Like Romo doesn't have a ring. I think Romo was absolutely good enough to win a Super Bowl. Phillip Rivers was good enough to win a Super Bowl. Matt Stafford and Matt Ryan are good enough to win a Super Bowl. So I guess that goes to your point of
there's like 20
somebody
of those
needs
guys.
To get Mahomes because at any time in the league, I think there probably will be 3 to 6 guys like Dak.
Yeah.
Where is he good enough to win a Super Bowl if he was on someone else's team? Sure. Jimmy Garoppolo could have won one more game and won a Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
And if he can win it,
complete
Dak can
one
win
more
it.
Pass.
Yeah, you can win it.
Absolutely, you can, right? So it to me, it comes into probability. And I don't think, maybe I'm an entitled Cowboys fan, I don't think the Cowboys should be sitting there hoping the moon and stars align so we can win the Super Bowl with this good of a quarterback. I want to try. I want to have the pedal to the metal trying that, but also one eye every offseason is, guys, is there a Mount Rushmore guy out there that we could seriously make a run at?
Sure. And the only thing I think that's getting frustrating for me about the Dak stuff is the number of people who say things like this from the 214. Dak is what he is. That's 8-8 and average. He's 40-24.
Yeah.
Like, well, the team just went 8-8 this season. It's like, okay.
With average to below average defenses, winning games.
He's 40-24. What about that is 8-8? Well, you just take the last season and you throw out any context and any reason that could have anything to do with not the quarterback. You put that on the quarterback and you say that's what he is. But then I bring up his career record and it's like, teams win games. Well, where can we be consistent?
Give him another 6 years. I bet it'll come back to 500.
If he's an 8-8 quarterback, he's also a 40-24 quarterback. If we want to attach records to the quarterback,
it's bad. I mean, and beyond that, after 4 years, you are what you are is a flawed statement as well. Okay, elsewhere at 1053thefan.com. Couple of stories right here. I'll hit you with. Salute to SMU. They beat UConn again, 79-75. Faron Hunt scored a career-high 23. He was a baller, 4-for-4 from the stripe in the last 16 seconds, scored, doubled his season average, 8-of-9 from the floor with a pair of threes and 7 rebounds. Salute to you, Mr. Faron Hunt, taking care of business. And SMU sitting at 17-6, 7-4 in the American Athletic Conference. And then Dallas Stars have placed right winger Alexander Radulov on the injured reserve. They called up Jason Robertson as they're in Toronto tonight skating. Radulov played against Carolina the other night, missed Sunday's game against the Blues with an upper body injury. Club has not released any other details. You can read all about those stories and more at 1053thefan.com. Okay, Nation, when we come back, biggest problem facing MLB, is it a conflict of interest? We'll discuss that. Welcome back, Nation. Salute to the Dallas Stars. They lead 1-0 about halfway through the first period in Toronto. We're talking here about what we think is the biggest problem facing Major League Baseball. Pretty significant conflict of interest. What are the chances that we get some real answers out of this? Segment's brought to you by My Computer Career, and it's brought to you by the Frankels. If you're hurt in an accident, it's not your fault. Call Frankel and Frankel, 214-333-3333, or go online to frankelfirm.com. It's a very frustrating day if you missed it. I'm sure you'll see it on highlight shows and interview shows throughout the evening as the Houston Astros opened up spring training and decided to have their players and franchise owner Jim Crane addressed the media, and it did not go very well at all. The main things from that, the main takeaways are that Bregman and Altuve decided to not answer the question, did you wear buzzers last year? Instead, they answered it in a way that would suggest they're avoiding the question and avoiding answering it.
Commissioner said we didn't.
Yeah, saying
that's
that,
what he said in the report, said we didn't.
Commissioner's report found no evidence of that. Other guys did deny it. I suppose there's a possibility that they just didn't know how important it was, you know, to say things a certain way. And who knows, they were probably very nervous in how they were handling it. Jim Crane completely lost his ability to speak and make sense, saying that the cheating did not impact the games. And then moments later, he said, no, I didn't say that. You know, so it would suggest, you know, that Jim Crane's either a complete idiot, was highly nervous, or was absolutely attempting to deceive and fail. But it was really bizarre, and the sports world instantly reacted to it. If you can't be around Twitter in the late morning, let me tell you, today was one of the biggest, like, outrages you'll see on Twitter, with people reacting to the Astros players making it worse with their non-denials. And with the way that they chose, especially owner Jim Crane, to answer that. I think the reason this is happening and the biggest problem is Major League Baseball just wants it to go away. The media is hungry for real answers, but the players, the owner of the Astros, and Major League Baseball are all instructing, guys, we have lawsuits to worry about, and we can't get into a finger-pointing fest that will allow the media to keep this story alive. Right now, we're in a crisis. We're going to overcome the crisis right now by going into our shell and dealing with the bad, right? We're going to go out and say things, then we're going to go to quiet and go no comment on it and wait for this story to go away. That's clearly the approach by Major League Baseball and the Houston Astros. And the result is going to be the league will protect the teams. The teams will protect each other. The media will end up finding out more and more, and the commissioner will shrug his shoulders and say, yeah, you know, that wasn't in a report. We didn't find. And as the weeks turn into months and years, there's going to be fewer and fewer people to hold accountable about this. And eventually the story will go away, but not entirely. But what they saw with the New England Patriots scandals, really, is that the NFL can be complicit in helping the Patriots cover it up. The league can know. The fans can know. Books can be written about this. Documentaries can be done about this. But that team, if it's great on the field, can still rise to the top. And maybe fans will hate them, but it will just make the fans want to tune in to maybe watch that team lose, just as they lose in, they tune in to try to see Floyd Mayweather get his head knocked off. You know, the fans will hate somebody, but that's actually good for ratings. So I think MLB is in a state of managing this. Craig Calcaterra, NBC Sports, wrote about it, did a great job chronicling Rob Manfred's mishandling of the situation. And if you add up all of these different variables, you can't really come up with any other conclusion than they're doing PR spin on this. When the Rob Manfred report came out January 13, Manfred claimed it was all about the Astros players who had initiated a sign-stealing scheme.
Ooh, they better be in trouble then.
Right? Then we found out the Astros were doing their own and that Alex Cora was responsible for sharing it. We found that out just a couple of days later. This was after Rob Manfred had already attempted to say, oh yeah, it was isolated to the Astros and just with the players. We had some players going rogue, which if you remember is how the NBA attempted to crisis manage their way through the Tim Donaghy rogue official thing. Oh yeah, yeah. These officials, these players, they're out there doing their own thing. We didn't have any knowledge of it, though. Then we found out there was a front office program started by a low-level employee. Haven't heard a lot about that, but the Operation Codebreaker was presented to the GM and everybody else in that front office. It was complete with budgeting spreadsheets. Here's how much this program is going to cost us, boss. Do you greenlight it? This was left out of Manfred's initial report. And there has since been evidence that Manfred was aware of that, did not include it in his report. He's trying to convince you, the fan, that this is something a few Astros players did. Nobody in the Astros organization had that much awareness about it. Are you going to buy it? Or are you going to insist that they do more? I think You're probably going to talk like you insist they do more. Your actions will say you don't care that much. Yeah, but try this out. Yesterday in the Washington Post, a report came out which put to bed the notion that any of this should have been news to Rob Manfred in November. From Barry Straluga and Dave Shine's report in the Washington Post, according to people at all levels throughout the sport, players, clubhouse staff members, scouts, and executives, the idea that the Astros employed nefarious methods was an open secret across baseball. The whole industry knows they've been cheating their ass off for 3 or 4 years, said an executive from a team that faced the Astros in the playoffs during that span. Everybody knew it. He estimated 10 to 12 teams had complained to Major League Baseball about the Astros over the years. An executive from another team agreed with that same number. It was a big open secret, really big, said a veteran scout from another team whose coverage included the Astros. Throughout baseball, throughout the scouting community for several years, not just starting in 2017, I would say probably 2016, maybe earlier, through 2019, things were going on that were blatantly against the rules. Two different executives, a scout from another team who covered games that involved the Astros, said, man, there was so much cheating going on for multiple years. Very tough spot to be in. In theory, as the commissioner, your job is to ensure safe competition between partners. They need a guy to govern and prevent them from cheating each other, right? Because of how competitive sports is. That's the idea of the commissioner. You get a fantasy sports commissioner, he is challenged with making sure you're not trying to cheat with the waiver wire or set up trades with your buddies and then split the profits. The commissioner's job is to be mindful, be a watchdog, be the eye in the sky for cheating and nefarious activity. But in this case, it was his job to find the cheating and nefarious activity and attempt to shield the public and the media's perspective on it. Massive conflict of interest. I don't know if American sports consumers care enough. To me, it's outrageous. I don't know if sports fans care enough to be like, hold on now. I can't be sure that the sport that I'm watching is on the up and up because the guy who's responsible for making sure of it doesn't care. He's too busy trying to make sure the people that pay his salary want him to continue to be the commissioner. That's the biggest problem with Rob Manfred. It is a faux commissioner seat. Yeah. You are essentially like the heavy. You are the enforcer of what the owners want you to accomplish. So as we look forward now as to where this story goes, I believe the media is going to continue to find more and more details. But the teams, the commissioner's office, they are going to go into almost an industrial fashion, ensuring that whatever the reports come up become denied, right? Oh, no, we haven't found any evidence of that. We know that's in Manfred's wheelhouse because he just did it 2 and 3 weeks ago and continues to do it. So it's disgusting. It's actually, though, the way a lot of our governmental agencies act. Did you guys know that? Like, if you want to be in the power industry, the energy industry, there is going to be somebody in Congress who is in charge of a committee that decides how that whole thing is going to be governed. The person responsible for governing those different entities trying to compete with one another is likely a plant from that same industry put in charge in order to ensure paths are cleared for the people with the power and the money. And that's what you get when you're talking about billionaires who have plenty of experience creating their hundreds and billion dollar empires inside that same basic organizational structure that, you know, America and most countries around the world are, very fond of doing. It works beautifully when you can marry your governmental agencies with the objectives of the businesses. And in American oil and energy, it happens. It's very, very prevalent. But in sports also, now it has taken over as the main mode of operation, right? We're rich. We have a commissioner. We want our sport to flow in a certain way so our sponsors like us. And now we can talk this commissioner into whatever we want. And by the way, we're going to pay him such an exorbitant salary that he's got to stay. Oh, He's never going to want to leave. He's looking at this like this is a freaking gravy train. Are you kidding me? Roger Goodell gets a $500 million per decade, or at least that's what he was on path to until Jerry Jones got a hold of him. So, you know, I think this model of doing business is so corrupt. It's so dirty. We're not going to get any answers. The more we search for answers, the more there is vested interests in just covering those up. I don't know, Mike. I think it's almost here's how I'll wrap this up. Okay. Finally, we have a decision to make. Are we just going to decide this is fine if my sports run like this and enjoy the sports? Because I think we're going to get very frustrated and make a lot of jokes about the Astros, but nothing's going to change.
Unfortunately, yes, because I still watch football, right? I still am going to watch baseball this year. You know, I'm going to make fun of the Astros and I'm going to trash the Astros. But, you know, to your point, it's probably still going to be $11 billion industry. Football's probably going to get close to $20 billion here pretty soon per year in making money. And it is what it is. And, you know, the NBA, you talked about Tim Donaghy. I mean, we had factual evidence that refs were throwing games, were giving games to teams that they liked or disliked. They were making sure a team they disliked lost. And the commissioner just buried it. They're like, hey, let's just bury it.
Get bad for the game.
But I still consume basketball every night, you know, at least during basketball season. And I understand what you're saying, because here's the deal. I think that the reason we're not hearing about the Boston Red Sox this week, after they already know everything and we're going to come out with it, they're like, let this Houston Astro thing play out and let me see how it goes, because I'm about to not punish Boston. I'm going to punish them, but I need to see. I guarantee with everything that just happened today, I would bet $1,000 next week we hear the Boston Red Sox didn't barely do anything.
Oh, they'll go that far with it?
I think we're going to hear from the commissioner's office it goes with what you just talked about. They're going to be like, that was way too much of a PR hit, and there's no way we can do that with one of our top 3 to 4 franchises in Major League Baseball. We're not going to do that and make 2017 and 2018 the same, and especially it being the Red Sox. We can trash the Astros because that's a organization that doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of Major League Baseball.
Not part of their brand.
We're not going to do that to the Red Sox. Just say they barely did anything wrong. All they did was relay signs from the runner at second base to the hitter. I guarantee you that's what's going to happen. And that's not true. Yeah. To your point, they're going to cover up that the Red Sox did something very similar to what the Astros did. And it was only for 1 year, maybe 2 years, maybe last year too, because Alex Cora brought it over to the Boston Red Sox. They're going to cover it up, and we're going to find out next week. You just wait till it comes out. Red Sox didn't really do anything.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see we're not going to go public with the punishment. I could see a couple of different things, or you know, maybe they don't issue a statement and then down the road they'll be like, oh yeah, we punished them. We gave them the same punishment as the Astros. But the approach is going to be to make the story as small as possible. And the only people that could keep them accountable would be the players in the sport who want to go headhunting.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll see that. You know, maybe the players who, you know, are most tied to this are going to be wearing a lot of extra bruises this year.
You know, what'd be interesting is when Garrett Cole is on the Yankees, and if the Yankees go after the Astros, and then he was on the Astros, and he's like, ooh, those were kind of my friends and teammates, are kind of still my friends, but not my teammates.
That's a great opportunity. That's how you ingratiate yourself to your teammates. You just, hey, F them. You throw at them, and now all of a sudden every Yankee
loves
you. I think
if CeCe was still in baseball, and you know he's not anymore, I think knowing CeCe, he would throw at the guys, and he wouldn't care about getting ejected.
But he's giant.
Yeah.
6'8", 280 pounds. Yeah. Let's fight about it,
too. We're being probably nice about the 280.
Really? Yeah. He's a big guy. A lot of it was muscle, too.
I do think at this point,
some of it,
they need to – players, it's just a game. It's one of 162. Here's where playing 162 really helps. So what if you get ejected?
Miss the playoffs by a game, Mike.
I know. Go get them. Let's just be like, let's see how the commissioner wants to handle all of us throwing all at the Houston Astros the whole game, and let's see what happens.
So what should happen is owner has to sell the team. Team can't play baseball year.
It's amazing how Jim Crane is like,
Yeah.
I mean, I had no clue. Okay, well, you're the owner of the team. Like,
Yeah.
That you should have to, oh, well, $5 million. Well, guess what? You made probably $100 million off of your team winning the World Series in 2017.
I mean, so why do the other teams not have a bigger fight in this? You know, how could you stand
well,
by?
Well, we heard that the owners weren't happy after yeah. they heard the punishment, but I think it just goes back to your whole thing is like, look, eventually, guys, we're all in this together. And guess what? Our commissioner, who's stinking it up in multiple ways, he kind of got a salary cap. Like yeah. he convinced Tony Clark, the baseball player who took over, unfortunately, for the Players Association to almost agree to a salary cap without knowing.
I mean, does Ray tell him, listen, if you know, your players might do this at some point, and we'll cover your back too. You know, this is,
I don't know what partners do
for each other.
I would say this in our world, the people with the most money are the ones that almost can't get punished.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
so I think that baseball is just like our society and businesses that have billions of dollars. If you have enough money, you can always take the blame and say, it was that person. That person's only making $1 million. The person that makes $1 billion is held responsible.
I think Rangers ownership is asleep at the wheel. I don't know how they could watch a team completely fail to draft and develop for a decade and not change general managers. But if you guys are listening and paying attention, please come out tomorrow and go hard at your in-state rivals, and I'll make you a deal. I won't call you out for not paying attention to your product for an entire year.
This is why Mark Cuban can say he doesn't care about baseball anymore. One of the reasons he doesn't care about baseball anymore is they wouldn't let him in.
Wouldn't
let him in because he was going to
disrupt.
Speak.
Yeah.
And they want owners of baseball teams to say and do exactly what you talked about.
Well, Jeremy Roenick didn't do what the NHL or NBC Sports wanted, and he's out of a job officially today.
Oh, what'd he do?
After a 10-year career, he has been let go. He talked about wanting to have a threesome with his wife and his broadcast partner, Catherine Tappan. They were all...
Was Catherine offended or not in on the idea?
I think that's what I take from it. He was suspended at the time a couple of months ago. He says, when you walk into every place and you have two blonde bombshells on each side, your chest pops out a lot more. He was on the Barstool Spittin' Chicklets podcast.
Yeah, just don't go on their podcasts if you have a respectable job.
When Roenick was asked if his wife and Tappan were both with him, he replied, yes, they are. And then Catherine says, will you shut up? She starts yelling at me, he said. I play it off like, you know, we're going to bed together every night, the three of us. Now, if it really come to fruition, that would be really good, but it's never going to happen. And he got fired for that. 10 years at NBC Sports. He was always kind of an edgy rock and roll hockey guy, right? I think he got in that Barstool environment.
I remember when Rob Dibble did something like this with the Washington Nationals on TV, and they're like, you know, you've done this enough that we can't have you on anymore.
Yeah, it'll end pretty quickly there. You know, baseball, sports broadcasting, you got to be wholesome. Remember when Slater went NFL and we saw it at the Super Bowl and they were like, yeah, you know, they said I got to be wholesome and I can't quite joke as much and be as edgy as much.
Hurricane had to calm it down a little bit.
Yeah, when you're more officially representing a sport in those kind of job capacities. Okay, coming up next, we'll
big
find
crosstalk.
Yeah, dude.
We don't want to miss it.
We got Woolchuck. We got Kevin Gray. We got CA. Colby Sapp is over there. The whole team next here in the G-Bag Nation. All righty. Yeah, we're wrapping up a broadcast here on a Thursday. Major show announcement came down 5 hours ago, and I know our nosebleed seats guys were tuned in as Mike Bassick was announced joining the KNC Masterpiece starting Monday 10 to 2, and Brian Broaddus joining us here in the G-Bag Nation starting Monday from 2 to 7. The former NFL scout and DallasCowboys.com writer has joined us here at the Fan full time.
Well, that is a strong, strong back-to-back now.
I would say this. It was from Atolo on the Autoflex Leasing fan text. I'm just throwing it out there. They feel like tomorrow we maybe should just do a best of Bassick and just celebrate me for 5 straight hours.
Yeah, let's just pull a bunch of audio and we won't even come to work.
It's a mic celebration.
Yeah, we'll just hit start. Yeah, 5 hours of mic rants and our fights. Yeah, it'll be great. Mm-hmm.
Best of maybe five segments.
We'll talk about you know, early on in the G-Bag Nation when I shared the story on how my girlfriend and now wife accidentally made me wet my pants and I didn't know what was coming out and stuff like that.
Bassick on the 20s.
Wow. We could really get into some of the highlights and lowlights from Mike Bassick. The first time we saw him full frontal. The full time we saw him full frontal in a bath.
That was in a bath.
I was the first one to go up there and see him. He was. I was like, "What the hell are you doing up there, Mike?"
Was that my first time?
The water was getting cold.
Was that my first time?
Was that your excuse?
No. Yeah, that was my excuse.
Because we're always roommates. I might have seen you before that. I probably seen Mike full frontal like 13 times, give or take.
I think I've only seen him full frontal 3 times.
Yeah.
He likes to do that.
A little under quota.
Yeah, he does. Exhibitionist in there. Mm-hmm. There is no doubt about it.
Yeah. He likes the shock value.
Yeah, tomorrow's Valentine's Day. You guys know what I do for Valentine's Day for my wife.
You walk around in the thong all day.
Yeah, and just say, whenever you need it, it's here.
And you do let the kids know, sorry, it's Valentine's Day.
He tells the kids this is what all dads do, so it's not like you can go to a friend's house.
Completely natural. If this is uncomfortable for you, you can go to your friends, I suppose.
So, Mike, what's the difference between a thong and a jock strap, since you've worn both?
Oh, well, the thong goes inside your butt crack, and the jock strap, you have it outside the butt cheeks.
Cups the cheeks, really firms it up.
Yeah, I'm more of a jock strap guy.
Right.
I was talking with Will Chambers about some of the issues with the Cincinnati Bengals.
Oh, Bengals.
And he sent me a link to a story. We were talking Joe Burrow yesterday, and would he really tell the Bengals, no, I don't even want to come to your team. He sent me a link to a story. Now, this was before Carson Palmer and TJ Houshmandzadeh got there. But there's a series of interviews with both Palmer and Houshmandzadeh talking about the things that the veterans told me when I first got there. Because I think they both joined the team like in 2002 or something like that, 2003, right around there.
Sounds about right for Palmer's career.
And at one point in the team trajectory, the trainer would just bring in a bunch of laundered jock straps and throw them in the middle of the floor. They weren't even organized enough to get each individual's jock strap. So each day that you needed one, you just found one that was your size and threw that baby on. Man.
They're clean.
As long as they're washed, no big deal.
They didn't even have water and Gatorade like in tubs. They just had one water fountain, which was on their practice field next to their stadium under the freeway. That's what, and they still do practice.
Why you put your number on your jock strap? And then the other thing too is you have clips, at least in Major League Baseball and Minor League Baseball, you have clips where you put all your dirty clothes on a clip, and then you throw it in the laundry. Yeah, so then when everything gets washed, they see, oh, this is Bassick's clip. Now let's go put this on in Bassick's locker.
I guess that's how behind the times they were. Mm-hmm. You know, the players didn't even know to bring some of this stuff up. It was going on for years, but it did change close to 20 years ago now, and they still have that reputation. Mm-hmm. I think that was the interesting thing to me as I went through those links. It was all about like basically pre-Y2K Bengals.
How did not anybody on the Bengals walk out to the practice field with no pants and no jock strap on, but have your jersey on and go, "Coach, we're out of jock straps and pants."
Because only you would do that.
But you'd lie, but you're still like, "I'm okay." And you jog out to your position and you line up.
Not everyone's a nudist, Mike. All right?
I think because of that previous statement, their practice field was under the highway. I guess they didn't have the kind of privacy required to pull
under
up
under a bridge down by the river.
And it's the center who does it.
Yeah.
Just runs out there.
Or the kicker, one of the oddballs.
What's coming up on the show, gentlemen?
Well, we got Patrick Walker at 8 o'clock. Star. Yep, coming up. CBS Sports. He had a pretty good Twitter string, I think, of Cowboys offseason moves. So we're going to pick his brain on that. And then at 9 o'clock, we got Jared. He's ready to spit hot fire when it comes to the Houston Astros from
Astros
today.
Yeah.
That's going to be fun to hear what Jared has to say.
Get ready for the Astro fans on the Autoflex Leasing fan text to be like,
"Are they sensitive?
I can't believe you
guys. They're in denial.
Yeah. They said they didn't
do anything.
Yeah, they didn't do anything wrong.
Oh, my gosh. They're going to come at me. We're going to go right out of the top. I'm about to blow up Jim Crane.
This is crazy. Oh, and you know we're going to talk some Mavericks. They had that game last night.
Awesome. 60-25.
Yeah, they were really – put it like this. Luka and Porzingis on the same page. This is like the first time it's just been working perfectly. They might have had a quarter together where it worked perfectly, but the entire game. So I was talking to Coop, and Coop has a theory. And I was telling him my theories as well about what has taken so long. And he said, you know, he watches every game. He's on the radio, so he's got every game. He said – Porzingis has had all of those same shots. He just wasn't making them early on because he wasn't comfortable yet.
Porzingis because he's scared of Luka.
He's basically saying that Luka has been involving him in the offense, that Porzingis just wasn't nailing those shots. He's had the same number of shots. He just wasn't nailing them. I threw in this part, and I think you were saying this too, Mike. Porzingis is more aggressive now. He's going to the basket more. He's not just taking those stretch five threes. So I even gave the example of this. What's caused him to become more aggressive is Dwight Powell is gone. It used to be pick and roll. Well, it's pick and roll only with Luka and Powell because Powell is the most efficient rim runner in the NBA. Yeah, so Powell goes out. Porzingis screws up Powell's knee on purpose to get him out.
Yep.
That was part of the diabolical plan.
Yep.
But anyway, Powell goes out, and all of a sudden, Porzingis has to roll to the rim a couple more times because they were using him in some center sets. And so all of a sudden, he's become more aggressive. So he's taking those threes, but he's also driving to the basket more. And it's not just, like you said, dribbling. It's just taking a couple of steps and slamming on somebody's pumpkin head. So the bottom line, he's become more effective. Pumpkin head.
Tump him
so
over.
Hopefully they can keep this thing up. And also, it has allowed Tim Hardaway Jr. to be wide effing open. Mm. So he's nailing all his three-pointers. He's always been pretty efficient as long as he doesn't have to create his own shot. So there you got this offense that's on fire, and now you got a defensive guy they brought in from Charlotte.
Then in the offseason, we add Buddy Hield to the mix.
Ooh.
Oh, I like it.
Boomer.
If
I'm thinking
Vlade can get past that. You know, Vlade, if he loads up the Mavericks, he's going to get fired.
Yeah, he's getting fired.
Here they come, the nosebleed seats. Let's have a good bleeding this evening, gentlemen.
Wooly the bleeds.
CA, here they come till tomorrow afternoon. Bleeders. At 2 p.m. for one final time, Mike Bassick rides with us in the G-Bag Nation on the Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.